This is the Showbiz segment of the show. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me, and news director Colin Jeffrey now switches to his alter ego as Showbiz Boy. Even has his own Showbiz Boy email address, right?
Yeah.
Showbizboy550@gmail.com.
You got it.
If you have questions about any of this stuff, he's here every week so we can review the movies that are opening today here in the St. Louis area. And we've got three of them for you today. And I'm going to start with a movie that I think is my favorite comedy of 2016. In 2014, Chris Rock made a movie called Top Five, which I thought was hysterical and did okay at the box office and got good reviews, but didn't get a tremendous number of people going to see it, unfortunately. If you haven't seen it, you should. It's on DVD and it's streaming. Very, very funny movie called Top Five. Then last year, Amy Schumer had the movie that changed her career called Trainwreck, directed by Judd Apatow. I thought that was the funniest movie of last year, and I thought it should have been nominated for a bunch of stuff at the Academy Awards. This year, the funniest movie I've seen so far in 2016 is called Keanu.
Okay.
Now, when you hear Keanu, you immediately think Reeves.
Yes.
Not about him. The movie is a movie from Key and Peele. Keegan-Michael Keel and Jordan Peele, who had a series on Comedy Central for, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years, whatever it was. And they stopped doing the show last year so that they could take a shot at something on the big screen. In this movie, they play two regular guys, just kind of what they call blurs, black nerds. And through a series of bizarre things, they get mistaken for gangsters. Gangsters called the Allentown Brothers, who in the first scene of the movie come into a warehouse where there is all sorts of drug operations going on, and the gangster, the Allentown Brothers, kill everybody in there in a slow motion murder-thon that is just full of every cliche you've ever seen. It's the sort of thing where you think, well, people are being slaughtered, but this is really funny the way they're doing it. And what makes it funny is the kitten. That would be Keanu, because the kitten runs through the mayhem like you've seen so many action stars doing. It's dodging bullets. It's running behind this person as they're falling dead. It seems like a ridiculous premise, but it works. And Keanu and the Allentown brothers are the only ones who survive this massacre in the warehouse. And Keanu gets away. Keanu ends up on the doorstep of the character played by Jordan Peele's apartment, just as he is recovering from his girlfriend breaking up with him, and he's the one who names the cat Keanu. And then one day he comes home and finds his apartment has been broken into, the furniture is all tossed around, the cat toys are all over the place, but the cat is not. Keanu is gone. And so he calls his buddy, played by Keegan-Michael Key, and the two of them then take off on this adventure into trying to get Keanu the kitten back. This leads them to an encounter with the Blips, who are the people who were thrown out of the Bloods and the Crips. And so now you've got a drug lord played by Method Man, formerly of Wu-Tang Clan, and a bunch of people around him. They're all gangbangers, and the characters being played by Key and Peele are the least gangbangy people you've ever seen, but they're Key and Peele, and so they can put it on. And they pretend they are the Allentown brothers. They're the toughest mofos around. And that kind of code switching, as it's called, it leads to hysterical scenes where they are acting with and reacting to the people around them in hysterical ways. I am not going to spoil everything for you, but I will tell you there are many times where these two characters have to improvise their way out of a very awkward situation because they're dealing with people who would very quickly kill them if they found out that they were not who they are pretending to be. And the situation just keeps escalating and escalating, but along the way, it is very funny. They are great characters. They are very good comedic actors. You also get a little bit of Will Forte as the next-door neighbor of Jordan Peele, who's a drug dealer with cornrows. I mentioned Method Man, Nia Long, Luis Guzman is in this thing. It's directed by Peter Atencio, who did most of the episodes of the Key and Peele series for Comedy Central. I laughed out loud multiple times in this movie. That does not happen a lot.
No.
I will tell you, this movie is rated R. is rated R for language. It's rated R for violence. There's no real nudity in there, although some scenes do take place in a strip club. But it's rated R for a reason. If you're sensitive to any of that stuff, don't go see this movie. But if you like that kind of stuff, and if you've ever liked anything Key and Peele have ever done, it's called Keanu. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
It's my favorite comedy so far in 2016.
That surprises me, because I've heard a lot of people that have seen it didn't like it.
Well, I'm a fan of theirs. Okay. So I go in there expecting to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And they didn't disappoint me. And like I said, I laughed out loud. There are some things that go on in this movie that are just so stupidly silly that you can't help but just go along for the ride. If you buy into the premise, I think you'll enjoy it. And by the way, that kitten, I'm not a cat person at all. Incredibly cute kitten. Yeah. I can't wait to hear the stories from Key and Peele doing interviews. I want somebody to ask them, how many kittens did you actually have to use? I mean, they must have found a cat that had just given birth to a whole litter of kittens and waited until they were about 5 or 6 weeks old, because they all look identical and very, very good.
And if you want to see a funny interview with them, there's a group out there called First We Feast, and they do a recurring interview series called Hot Ones. And in this, they make people eat hot wings with progressively hotter sauces to the point where they're ridiculous. And these two are eating the hot wings. Uh-huh. It's 6 hot wings where it goes up to an outrageously. It's very funny to see them react and then have someone asking them like legitimate interview questions. Meanwhile, they are dying of the heat of these hot wings.
Right there is the answer to how far do you have to go to sell a movie in America?
Yes. Oh, it's a very funny interview.
I mean, it's one thing to do radio and TV interviews. You want to get on Good Morning America. You know, you hope Ellen invites you so you can be exposed to that. You do all the cable interviews. You know, I saw that they were on The Daily Show the other day. I didn't see the show, but I saw in the listings that they were on there, and they did a couple of the late night shows. And then, okay, what's the next level down from that? Okay, you talk to some podcasters and some from newspaper movie reviewers. At what point does your agent say to you, okay, now you got to go do the one with the hot wings? And you go, I'm sorry, what? I'm not going. I want to promote my movie. I want as many people as possible to see it. I'm not going to put hot sauce in my mouth.
Yeah. And like, wow. It's a funny interview, though. Okay. I encourage you watch it. All right. First We Feast.
Okay. What did you see this week?
Oh, wow. I saw Mother's Day.
This is a new one from Gary Marshall, who's already done Valentine's
Day.
It's
not a new one.
And Labor Day. What do you mean it's not a new one?
He didn't do Labor Day. He did Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve.
Okay.
It's not a new one, because he's done the movie.
Oh, right. Labor Day was Jason Reitman.
Yes.
Yeah, but terrible.
He's done the movie twice before.
Okay.
Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve.
This is the same thing?
It's just a new holiday. Yes, if you're not familiar with the way these movies work, it's the intertwining vignettes of several characters around a holiday. So this is the week leading up to Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to go through the characters, because this may be the best way to review it.
Okay.
Jennifer Aniston plays Sandy. She's a divorced mother of two, and her ex married a tween. A very young girl, but they call her a tween. This is a type of biting humor you can expect from this movie.
Wow.
Kate Hudson and Sarah Chalke play sisters who live near one another. Kate Hudson is married to an American Indian, and her sister, Gabby, is a lesbian. Both of them have kids, and their parents are, wait for it, kind of racist people from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarity ensues there. Jason Sudeikis plays a single dad with two girls. His wife, Jennifer Garner, died in combat, and so he's not going to celebrate Mother's Day. But watch out, because Jennifer Aniston is on the prowl.
Oh, wow.
Then there's a young couple.
By the way, right there is a description right out of the Gary Marshall playbook.
Oh, yes.
She's a young mom on the prowl.
Yes.
I believe that's called a cougar, isn't it?
Sure. Why not? Yes.
Okay.
Then there's a young couple who have kids but aren't married. What's going to happen there? And then Julia Roberts is a, I guess she's an infomercial queen named Miranda, who's chosen to have a career over a family.
Uh-huh. I have not seen any of the movie. I did see a picture of Julia Roberts in this bright orange wig.
Uh-huh.
Is that the hair that she has in the whole movie?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Wow. Looks terrible.
So they're in Atlanta, and they conveniently all intersect at key things. A park, a grocery store, wherever. They just bump into one another, of course, because Atlanta's a small town and things like that happen.
Right.
You know. Well, exactly.
Like, yeah.
So if you're guessing that this is predictable, that's because it is. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of movies.
Yeah.
And so there's certain plot things we can see because we've seen it before.
Yeah.
If you've never seen a movie before, you could probably guess what's about to happen.
That's the definition of a badly predictable movie. Yeah. You've never seen a movie before and you still know, I know what's going to happen now.
You're going to chuckle a couple times. You might be moved if... I don't know. You might be, sure.
Okay.
You might be moved.
Okay. Is anyone going to cry?
If your mother is very maudlin, she will cry. Or if you're of the age to be a mother, you may cry. You might. I don't know. You're probably not, because okay. It's poorly edited. Like, it's a bad movie on top of being not a great movie.
You mean
movie.
It's a badly made movie?
It's a badly made movie.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not offensively bad, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Take your mom to it. I mean, sure. I mean, if your mom is into these other movies that we've sort of discussed, this New Year's Eve, mm-hmm. Maybe Princess Diaries type thing, that level of, you know, really sophisticated humor, this might be for you. Like, then take her, sure.
Okay.
My biggest issue is it's called Mother's Day, and it opens the week before it.
Yeah.
And so it's opening not too long after Jungle Book. In the realm with Keanu, that's probably going to get a decent amount of buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And next week, Captain America Civil War comes out. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why they're like, oh, we shouldn't come out that weekend. But they're not competing. They should have looked at what happened with Sisters. Sisters got more press coming out against Star Wars, just for it coming out against Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
They should have just bit the bullet and waited till next week and released, because... I think this movie might shrink pretty... It might be on two screens in your theater this week. It might be on one next week.
Wow.
Because...
You're telling me that it's possible that by Mother's Day, the movie Mother's Day won't be shown in many theaters.
Yeah, it's going to start to be not in a lot of... Because it is not a good movie.
Wow.
And...
You want to rate it for us on a scale of 10?
I feel bad because it's Mother's Day is coming up, and I'm sitting here saying, oh, Mother's Day is horrible.
Yeah.
So, as a movie... It's a two.
Okay.
It's not good.
You know, why do you feel guilty about that?
Because it's Mother's Day.
You feel like you're
feel bad.
Here's what's happening. Colin feels bad because he feels like it's insulting the wife of his little girl.
Mm-hmm.
The mother of his little girl.
I don't think she would like it very much. I feel like my mom might like it. Like, okay. My mom,
you feel like
might
you're
actually,
giving your mom a two.
Yes,
right
I
now.
Feel like I'm giving my mom a two for her taste in movies. And that's a horrible thing to do.
You're not rating your mother here.
But
you're rating a bad movie.
Maybe this is what they were going for. If you've seen Love Actually, this is the opposite of that. It's the exact opposite.
Because Love Actually is a good, entertaining movie.
I watch Love Actually just about every Christmas time because it's not necessarily a Christmas per se movie, but it's set around that, and it's good.
Yeah.
This is not. Like, but at the same time, you're not going to go see this movie and be like, well, I swear off movies for the year. It's not that bad. You're just going to be like, in 4 days, you'll have forgotten
about
it.
It's not like that Miles Davis thing that Don Cheadle did.
Really
did. I gave
like
it 1 out of 10 last week.
Yeah. So, you know, if this sounds like something your mom might like, bite the bullet. It's a little under 2 hours.
Sounds to me like what you want to do is take mom to the movie theater, buy a ticket, walk mom into a comfortable seat for Mother's Day, then leave and go down the hall and go see Keanu.
Yes. Or wait till next week and go see Captain America.
Okay. Either way.
If you can find a theater still playing Mother's Day by Mother's Day.
Wow. Third movie for this week is called Sing Street. It's a departure from both of those. This is made by John Carney. Not the John Carney who works here, but the John Carney who several years ago made a movie called Once. A movie that made quite a splash at the box office and, in fact, was so popular as an independent movie that it was turned into a Broadway show. And that Broadway show is now touring around the country. And in fact, my wife and I went down to the Fox last year and saw it there. Terrific. And the movie, Once, also spawned the song that won the Oscar that year for Best Song.
Glenn Hansard.
Yes. And
I'm going to Sing Street.
Thank you. That's John Carney right there with his
as
endorsement.
Well.
Following Once, this director, John Carney, made another movie called Begin Again. And when I say he made them, he's the guy who writes them and directs them. He made one called Begin Again, which had...
Mark Ruffalo, Adam Levine.
And who's the
female, that's a good question.
Female star that... Oh,
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Spacing out. Keira Knightley. And that movie was okay, but coming off of Once, which was just so wonderful, it was a disappointment. Well, now he's back with a new one, which is called Sing Street, which takes place in Dublin, Ireland. It is a story of a 15-year-old boy in 1985 whose parents are always arguing, his home life is not good, and because they can't afford the private school he's been put in, he gets moved into a Catholic school where he doesn't get along with the priest who runs the school. There's a bully there who starts picking on him immediately. But on one of the early days of his experience at that school, he sees a girl, maybe a year or so older than him, standing across the street from the school. And he asks a kid who he's befriended at his school, who is that? And he says, oh, yeah, she's there every day. We don't think she goes to school, and she doesn't really talk to anybody. And every guy who's tried to hit on her, it hasn't worked. Well, of course, now this becomes his obsession, and he goes over and starts talking to her, and she says that she's a model, and he says, well, maybe you'd like to make a video for my band. And she says, you have a band? Yeah. Oh, yeah. What kind of music do you play? Well, he had just been watching some videos at home with his older brother. It's 1985, and they'd been watching some Duran Duran videos. So he mentions Duran Duran and, you know, bands like that. And she says, oh, I like them. Yeah, well, maybe, you know, if you, I'd like to hear some of your songs, and maybe if I like it, I'll come and do the video with you. So he's all excited by that. He's gotten further than any of the other boys from that school have gone. And he goes back, and he talks to his friend, and the first thing he says is, okay, we have to start a band. And from that moment on, they do. They start a band. They get other boys involved in it. They write some original songs. And they get this girl to be in the videos. And the boy and the girl develop a friendship, a relationship. Meanwhile, we see him being exposed to more 80s music like Culture Club and The Cure and the kind of stuff that was being played in America on MTV in 1985. It's being played in Ireland, too. And the boy starts dressing like those musicians when he goes to school, which pisses off the priest in charge even more. He writes songs like them, too. And as I said, he gets the girl to appear in these videos. It has a similar feel to a movie called The Commitments, which is probably about 20 years old, which is about also about Irish youth forming a band, but in a very different way. This is really heartwarming. The music is good. It has a wonderful sensibility. You have a smile on your face throughout the whole thing. If you've liked other Irish movies like, what besides The Commitments? The Snapper or Waking Ned Devine, mm-hmm. or any of those these Irish filmmakers who really are good at telling a story and making their characters so utterly likable. That is what this movie is. I give it a 7.5 out of 10. It's called Sing Street. It is opening today, probably a Plaza Frontenac kind of movie, but I really enjoyed it. And I like this filmmaker. His name is John Carney.
Okay.
There you go.
Sounds good.
All right. Now, since we're done with this week's movies, I have to mention a movie that you reviewed last week or the week before. My wife and I finally went to see it the other night, and that is The Jungle Book.
What'd you end up thinking?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's the word I said to myself over and over while I was watching this, because technically, it is the most amazing animation I've seen since the brilliance of Pixar first started coming out with Toy Story and A Bug's Life and on, and the stuff that they've done. And they've gotten much better at it. But what Jon Favreau and his technical team have done with The Jungle Book, with a live-action boy and all the animals animated, it's a spectacular picture.
But the animals seemed real.
So real. Have you seen it?
Yes. We went to the drive-in last...
you went to Skyview last
Yeah,
weekend.
We went to Skyview and saw it. And then the second movie was Zootopia. So we had a blast with it. So it was animals.
Weren't you stunned?
Yes.
At how realistic everything in Jungle Book is?
It was awesome. It was awesome. Frank said it, he loved it. And then Colin said how much he loved it and everything. And I thought, well, we're going to go see it. I knew nothing about The Jungle Book.
You had not seen the original from 1967?
No.
Well, that one, compared to this one, that one's a cartoon.
Yeah.
Of course, it was in the era of hand-drawn Disney animation. 50 years ago, we're talking about. Now, what Jon Favreau and his technical team have done is one of the most stunning visual effects I've ever seen in my life. not only do the animals look realistic, and there's a tiger in there by the name of Shere Khan, who's voiced by Idris Elba. That tiger moves like a real tiger.
Yes.
And I read an article about how they actually studied footage of real tigers to learn how their muscles moved, and then wrote new computer software to recreate mm-hmm. how those muscles moved and how the fur moves. There's a scene in this movie where the boy and the animals are in a rainstorm, and the water dripping off of the fur of these animals, the wolves especially, mm-hmm. who are the friends of the boy, the little droplets form at the end of their fur and hangs there for a minute and then drops and has little reflections in it and running down their faces and through their matted fur. It's unbelievable, Colin.
It is. It's quite the experience, isn't it?
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It is the... As I said, just an amazing technical achievement. I put it up there with what... who was the guy who directed Gravity a few years ago?
Inarritu.
No, he did Birdman.
That was Cuarón.
Okay.
Alfonso Cuarón,
right. Remember what we said after seeing Gravity? That guy had changed the paradigm
uh-huh.
for what space movies were going to look like mm-hmm. and the way he did everything around those characters while... making us really feel like Sandra Bullock and George Clooney were actually in space.
Now, is the Jungle Book, it's rated PG-13, correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because when we were watching it and we were thinking that, McKenna, how old is McKenna, your daughter?
Four.
Four.
Oh, she, too intense for her. By
oh, that would
mile.
Be way too intense and scary. And
yes.
even, how old do you think it would?
I'd say right about 10 is probably.
Yeah,
I agree.
And even then, they've got to be a pretty
yeah.
sturdy 10, I guess is the way to put it, because
yeah.
it looks so real.
Yes.
It does.
And the Shere Khan, the tiger, is one of the scariest characters you'll see on screen this year in any movie.
Yeah.
And if you think you're treating your child to another goofy Disney animated story.
No, don't. Be careful.
You're going to be quite surprised when your
yeah.
daughter or son jumps in your lap in fear and then has nightmares for
yeah.
about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Very, very intense.
Yeah.
But really well done. And by the way, in that regard, I want to mention, before we saw The Jungle Book, they showed three trailers for upcoming movies. The Secret Life of Pets, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, and Ice Age Collision Course.
Yes.
By the time we were done with The Jungle Book, all three of those movies looked like they were made 50 years ago.
Yep.
The technology of their animation is so cheap and basic compared to this huge advancement that Favreau and the Disney team have made. It's like they're working in a different medium.
Mm-hmm. It's really something.
I'm giving it a 9 out of 10.
It's very good, and it'll be curious to see if they can get away with animated movie when the Oscars roll around, or if they're going to be put up in a live action. This is odd. This is a weird time. The only thing we have to compare it to is Life of Pi, because that was an animated tiger and just someone, but so much more of this is animated. So
yeah.
I'd imagine live action, because not all of it is
So you think it might be up for Best Picture, not just Best Animated Picture?
I mean, granted, we are in April,
yeah,
but it's one of the best movies I've seen this year.
I agree.
It's very good.
And the voice cast for this, by the way, the boy, who's a real-life, live-action boy in the movie, is played by a young Indian actor named Neil Sethi.
Mm-hmm.
And I mention his name because he's terrific in the movie. And I saw, I went online this morning to see if I could learn some stuff about what happened behind the scenes and how they made this movie. And they have scenes showing Jon Favreau trying to shoot a scene where Baloo the bear is singing Bear Necessities. It's Bill Murray mm-hmm. who does that. Does a pretty good job with
yes,
it, too.
He does.
He's very funny and definitely great casting for him. And they show how they do the scene where Baloo is on his back floating down the river and Mowgli, the boy, is sitting on top of him. They're singing and they're splashing. And the way they did it was this kid was actually on some sort of, like, canoe upside down, and he's sitting there in some real water, and Jon Favreau, the director, is in the water just ahead of him, singing along with him and splashing him with water, so that the water that you see on the screen is not animated.
It's real.
They take real, and there are other things like real trees and real rocks, and real stuff. So the movie's not 100% animated.
No.
It's a combination of those two.
And that little boy, the way he acted without having, you know, those animals around was incredible.
It's all blue screen.
Yeah, I know. It was incredible.
He did a fantastic job. I want to mention the other people who did voices in this. Scarlett Johansson
mm-hmm.
as Ka. Ben Kingsley as Bagheera, who's the panther. Lupita Nyong'o as the mother wolf. Gary Shandling, in what I guess was his last movie role, plays the porcupine in this, Icky.
Oh, Gary Shandling was the...
Yes.
Oh, I know. Christopher Walken was in there, too.
Christopher Walken plays...
the king. He sings King Louis.
The giant orangutan. Yeah. He is King Louis, and he sings I Want to Be Like You.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and as only he could.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's weird because I'm so familiar with the Louis Prima version from 1967, and Christopher Walken does an okay job compared to that. People who don't know that, they're going to love it.
Oh, yeah.
They're just going to love it. If you haven't seen it yet, and by the way, that's not a lot of people because this is doing monster numbers.
It's almost up to 600 million. I think it's going to catch possibly Batman versus Superman.
Well, you were telling me before we went on that Batman versus Superman is starting to stall out at the box office already.
It's not even. It may not even reach Zootopia. There's just one. There's a couple things I wanted to mention. I really enjoyed 10 Cloverfield Lane earlier this year, a thriller.
Yeah, I did too.
Dan Trachtenberg is the director of that. He's coming to direct an episode of Black Mirror. The show you mentioned last week.
Yes.
He's going to direct one of Netflix's episodes of that show.
Good.
So I'm looking forward to that because I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
One other quick note. There was a man who got sucker punched this week because Mario Licato, someone thought he looked like Shia LaBeouf. Someone thought he looked, so they walked up and punched him because they thought it was Shia LaBeouf, I guess. It was a weird story. Walked up and punched him. Shia LaBeouf heard about it, sent him a message on Twitter with his phone number, and spoke to him and essentially apologized. Like, I'm sorry that whatever, we don't know exactly what
I'm sorry that I'm such a jerk that somebody would want to punch me in public and instead hit you.
Exactly.
Wow.
Just a weird, weird story.
All right, now the final thing I want to ask you about is an announcement this week by the people at Turner, who own TCM, which is the classic old movies channel. They are coming out with their own streaming video service, which they call Filmstruck. It's going to debut in the fall, and they're going to have access to the Criterion Collection of classic films, plus a bunch of the stuff that's on TCM. It's going to be on demand, like Netflix or Amazon Prime or Hulu. They have movies like A Hard Day's Night from the Beatles and Seven Samurai, Mad Max, Blood Simple. A bunch of those are going to be on there. And they're going to release this as yet another streaming service. How many streaming services can possibly exist? Before you answer that, I got to tell you, a few months ago, NBC launched their own streaming service for comedies called CISO, S-E-E-S-O, as in NBC See It, but this is CISO. I haven't heard one thing about that. Disney has one called Disney Life. I don't know anybody who subscribes to that. There's another one called Tribeca Shortlist, where you get some of the movies that have played at the Tribeca Film Festival. Lifetime has their own movie club. There's a streaming service called Fear Factory for just horror movies. There's the Sundance Doc Club. And I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. You have to pay for each of these.
Yes.
Now, you're already paying $10 a month for streaming service for Netflix, and maybe you're already paying $99 a year for Amazon Prime, and you're getting that video.
$10 for Hulu.
You talked about that. I'm not going to do. I'm not, that's it. I'm done once I can do Netflix and Amazon. How far down the list do you have to go, oh, I also want to pay, even if it's $5 a month, to watch TCM classics on demand?
Well, the worst part of what you're saying is that, let's say that's the base price. That gets you access to a limited number of the Criterion Collection. In order to do that, you have to sign up for their premium service, which is even more.
Oh.
To get access to the complete Criterion. Now, I guess the good news is a lot of these movies aren't movies that people... Very rarely have I been somewhere and someone's like, I have to see Seven Samurai right now. Do you have it streaming?
Yeah.
I can say that's never happened to me. But for people who are huge fans of these, the Criterion Collection films are typically fairly expensive on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really want access to these, even at $15 a month... That's going to pay for itself if you watch one movie a month.
Are they only going to be available on this thing? You could not get them, for instance, on Amazon Prime or Netflix?
At this point, I'd have to say I doubt it because they'd be sort of shooting themselves in the foot, but who knows? I mean, how many people are realistically going to sign up?
Well, here's the, that's my point. How many people are going to do this? And, you know, we've talked about cord cutters before. People who don't want to have cable because it's so expensive to get, you know, even just basic cable service. But then you add on HBO and Showtime. But when you do that, you get other things on all these other channels. But people aren't doing that because cable's too expensive.
Yeah.
So now you got to pay for individually Netflix, Amazon Prime, this thing, that thing, Hulu. If you want ESPN, that's got an over the top service. CBS, ABC, and NBC, they have their own streaming services. Those that's going to cost you more than cable in the long run.
Yeah, I think what I'll do for you at some point is I'll write an article for you. If I were to subscribe to these, how much would it cost me? Cutting the cord, how much would it cost me a month? And we'll see what the answer is. I'll go and research all this.
I guarantee you it's more expensive than just getting Charter or UVerse or,
yes,
or Dish or DirecTV.
Yeah.
The difference is, of course, you do get stuff on demand when you need that.
Oh, then I can watch, you know, I can watch any Kurosawa film anytime on a plane. Why not? Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. I can watch 8.5 with all my friends who know what that is.
Yeah, but because you don't have cable service, good luck getting the Blues game tonight.
It's exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a mess.
That's our showbiz stuff for this week. Thank you, Colin.
Thank you.
Back in a few minutes here on the Big 550 KTRS.